So if you could be here around 9, that would be great. Okay?
Well, listen here.
Hello, and welcome to 90 Day Fiancé, okay. I'm Mr. O, and today, Ms. H and I will be discussing Season 8, Episode 3 of Happily Ever After. In this episode, Gino doesn't have any money or need for any lawyers. Liz goes dress shopping with her skeptical family. Ashley cooks up a communication bath for Manuel. Rob wants to solve his relationship with Sophie using stolen flowers in a to-do list. Emily's family learns they have to plan a Cameroonian wedding. And Emily catches Mahmoud looking at the first obviously Muslim woman that he sees. All right, thanks for listening. Stay safe and enjoy.
Hello, Mr. O.
Hello, Ms. H.
How are you today?
I'm not doing too bad. Like, coming up on my last, I feel like it's been 3 weeks and we've been like, it's spring break. And I was like, this is my last day. I'm back to work tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, I technically didn't go to work today, but I've been working, so...
You had to take the day off work to go to a different work
basically. Yeah. This is my life.
Yes.
So, we have a lot of jobless people, so why don't we start off with them?
Okay.
Now let's talk about Ed and Liz. So, Liz is making breakfast pizzas with Riley and Ed. Ed is getting a bit anxious about the mess being made in the kitchen with the flour, which then causes Ed and Liz to bicker about who creates more of a mess in the kitchen. Things are getting tense, and they're calling each other brats. Ed accuses Liz of being pouty, and Liz says that Ed's just ruining the day. And then Liz's daughter, Riley, tells both of them to stop talking about it, and they'll just clean up when they're done. Liz says that they still have issues, but they're working on how to communicate. She says that there is more stress because of the wedding and the fact that they're living off their savings because neither of them is really working right now, even though they're both working towards getting a real estate license. They literally kiss and make up. Later, Liz is going wedding dress shopping with her daughter, her mom, and grandma. Liz says that she doesn't want to get married in a ball gown, and she wants them to keep in mind that they're getting married in a barn. They're about 2 months away from the wedding, but Liz just doesn't feel pressure to buy something today, especially since they are on a modest budget. Liz's mom is not a fan of Ed, especially after the engagement party. Her grandma, Lavina, says that she just wants Liz to be happy. As long as they communicate, she's okay with this wedding. Her mom, Patty, just also wants Liz to be happy. Liz comes out in the first dress, in basically a ball gown, and she's kind of shocked that she actually likes that one. Liz then toasts to the fact that she's shocked the wedding is actually happening, and Patty agrees. She actually wants to talk to Ed to make sure that all the awkwardness between them is gone. Liz doesn't like this idea because she doesn't want to live in the past and thinks that this will just cause more drama, but Patty thinks the air needs to be clear. Liz starts crying, saying that she's worried they'll be too hard on him, and she thinks that she's hard on him enough. Liz says that Ed self-sabotages their relationship when things are going well. Liz wants her family to see how much they've improved. Liz then walks out in a second dress, and it's almost $900. Liz never really told us what the budget was, but Riley tells her that if it's a little over than what she wanted to spend, she should just do it. Liz says yes to the dress, and that's pretty much it.
Uh-huh.
All right, so, I mean, Mom doesn't seem like she likes Ed, but she's going along with this anyway. And then the rationale is, because it makes you happy. Do you think that that's enough to support? Because it's like, you might be happy right now.
I mean, I don't think that's... It depends on what you mean by support here, right? Because it's not like... Like, I'm trying to imagine if one of my daughters was marrying somebody like this. And it's like, I'm not going to like disown you and tell you I'm never going to see you again. I'm going to be there to support you. I think it's a terrible idea. I don't like this guy. I'll do what I have to do to keep things civil. But I don't know if that means that's the same thing as support. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, listen, I don't like the guy. I'm probably never going to like the guy. I'm not going to go out of my way to antagonize him or anything, but.
Right.
Yeah, but you're going to get married anyway. I mean, to me, it's like the reason to support is like you're going to do it whether I support you or not. So I might as well be there instead of not be there. Those are really my choices here.
Okay, so without knowing the outcome, so like pretending you don't know the outcome of their relationship, would you think that this couple was going to make it, just even based on them bickering about the kitchen?
They called her a brat in front of her daughter. Like,
yeah.
No.
It was a really uncomfortable, like a really cringy, just as a spectator watching this argument, you're just like, ew, why are you talking to each other like that? It was just really ugly.
Right. It was because it went from, it could have been like a playful little, oh, you guys are making a mess. Oh, right. Look at that. And it just devolved into, you shithead, you make a mess, more mess than we ever did. Look at this mess over here. Look at over here. Look at you, Joe. You need to shut up. And it's one of those fights that, like, I don't think either of them would describe it as being that nasty, simply right. because they didn't get loud.
Okay, yeah. And they did kind of shut it down rather quickly in the whole grand scheme of things.
Sure. But it's like, why didn't even go? I don't understand. I just don't understand why you would want to marry somebody who, often enough, when you look at them, you're like, fucking Brad, God damn it. Like, why would you want to marry that person?
Right. Yeah, it definitely escalated quickly where you're like, they have issues, right? That needs to be resolved because it's like, it escalates and gets ugly fast because there's something bubbling at the surface all the time with them.
Right. And it's always like, I don't know, they kind of just always blame the external circumstances. Oh, it's just a stressful time right now. And it's like, but it's always going to be a stressful time.
Yeah, there's always going to be something. That's true.
Mm-hmm. Like, especially if they start working together, it's either going to be very stress at work, stress at the things. We have this, we do the kitchen. There's always going to be something.
We have a lack of money. Right? I mean, lack of money is always like the biggest stressor, right? So they always say that that's what most couples like end up like root cause being kind of the demise of a relationship. And I don't even necessarily think it's like money, but it's like the stress that comes with not having money.
Right. The stress. I mean, it's all kinds of stress. It's just eats away at relationships. And money stress is, especially because money stress is a stress that different people kind of react to differently, right? Because at the end result, there's two solutions to not having enough money to sustain what you're doing right now. You either do less or make more.
Right.
And some people are going to like worry more about the doing less. And some people are going to worry about more about the doing more. And I feel making more. Right. And I feel like we've seen that in other things. We definitely saw it on Love After Lockup where one person was, granted, this person was an idiot, were like, well, I got to spend the money to get the stuff to start my new business. That's going to make us all the money. That's going to solve our money problems. Right. And then it doesn't work.
Yeah, but I also think money is kind of one of those situations where you can work on it as hard as you possibly can, and it's still possible that you're not making a significant impact to improve your situation. And so I think it's like something where there are certain factors of the stress of money that are completely out of your control.
Sure. There's not a little button in your mouse cage that says push button to get more money.
Right.
Like, just continue to push this button. Like, there's no guarantee that you can actually get more of the money. For sure.
Yeah.
And then things come up that cost money that that you didn't have in your budget.
Sure. So yeah, it just these two.
All right.
Whatever. So, let's fast forward to the end with them.
Yeah. Really? Let's just get there. So since we started with them, let's start with the other people that have no jobs and also money problems.
Oh, gosh.
That's Jasmine and Gina. At least one of the other ones. There might be more, but these two are the ones I thought of. So Jasmine and Gina were in the car after their disastrous trip to the lawyer. So they stop at a cafe and get a bite on the way home. So Jasmine is already on the verge of tears before they sit down. She just thinks that 2 years is way longer than she was expecting it to take to get her kids here. Gino tells us that he thought it would be sooner, but Jasmine's kind of like, oh, you thought that? That's because you felt the paperwork wrong, and it would have been quicker if we'd have had a lawyer from the beginning. So he just thinks it's just one thing. It's like one mistake. Anybody could have made it. Like, whatever, you're holding this against me. And so she doesn't want him to be in charge of the visa process anymore because, you know, as dramatic as she is, you screwed over my life, which he's just like, well, I think that's a strong statement. So he starts to get angry that she's criticizing him. He's like, I busted my ass and you're criticizing me. You shouldn't be criticizing me. I worked so hard. Right? He wants to be in charge of writing the new application because whether he writes it or not, the 2-year time frame doesn't change whether he does it or the lawyer does it. So Jasmine is worried, though, that that's true as long as nothing goes wrong. And she's worried that since you already messed it up one time, like if something goes wrong again, then we're going to have to start that whole process over. So please, please, let's just use the lawyer. But he keeps saying that we don't have the money for a lawyer. We don't have the money for a lawyer. So he tells us in an interview that he wants the kids here as much as she does, but, you know, he just can't afford, like, if he can't afford the lawyer right now. Sure, he made a mistake, but isn't it really both of their faults that this happened?
Oh, God.
It's like, and he's like, I can fix this myself. I'm fully capable of filling out these government forms. So she says that money should be no object to get what he wants, and he just, at this point, is just like, no. And making the Gino face. Heavy on the Gino face, this whole segment. So she calls him an evil person, and then he, again, stresses on how he's been busting his ass to get her here and doesn't want to be criticized. So he keeps insisting he's going to be able to do this himself, and she says that their priorities are too far off, and he won't be a good father. That would make him not a good father. And then he says, well, she's fucked up in her dumb head. So then, again, she says the thing that I think she said this more than I love you to this man is, I want to go back to Panama.
Yeah, right.
So he's resentful that she's blaming him for her kids, and she cries and tells him it is her fault because she never should have come to America without them. She never should have been with you. Whatever, this sucks. So now he's extra upset because he doesn't think being a stubborn ass would make him necessarily a bad father, right? Which is what he's doing right now. So anyway, then she leaves. And she says, you know, once again, how much she doesn't want to be here and she just wants to go back to Panama. This is all going to fall apart. All right. So, wait, what? How many times do you have to make the threat of I want to go back to Panama before it stops being effective even a little bit?
I think she actually may want to this time. You know, I feel like all the other times it's like she only said that as like some kind of like leverage or, you know, incentive for him to act right according to her, you know. But I think now she might actually want to go back because her mom's back there, her kids are back there, and, you know, it's under the circumstances with her mom being sick, her kids like just being separated from them. She might genuinely actually want to go back and not be using it as like a punishment for Gino, finally.
Right. Yes. But, I mean, part of this was, Gino, the part of this that just seems either fake or disingenuous from one or both of them is they could easily come up with $5,000.
Yeah, like, freaking Gino, just get a job. How hard is it for Gino to go back and get a job?
You know, I did peep on Reddit. There's some speculation that Jasmine's wearing, and I legit think this looks right. She's wearing a Datejust, which is a Rolex that's worth $10,000.
Oh, gosh,
Like, and that's one of the things that comes with it. And then, you know, that comes up too. Well, you needed $5,000. Crazy how that's exactly how much your butt lift cost. And so it seems disingenuous that it's like that she's saying my kids are my most important thing because she hasn't been demonstrating that so far.
Yeah, right? Well, there's a couple things here. Like when they're playing the blame game, you know, who's really responsible for this? And Gino is just so ridiculous. Like, it's both our faults. And it kind of just reminds me of that Simpsons. Like, it takes two people to lie. One person to lie and the other person to believe it, you know?
Right.
And I feel like Gino's trying to, like, somehow place the blame on Jasmine or at least share responsibility with Jasmine. And it's like, but how is it her fault? Because she trusted you? She's the one who didn't really trust you. She wanted to get the lawyer.
It depends on how he means it's her fault, right? If he's saying it's her fault we don't have the $5,000 for a lawyer.
No, I don't think that's what he was saying. Right?
But if he's saying, it's your fault because it's actually ultimately at the end of the day, they're your kids, your responsibility.
Yeah.
When he didn't let her hire the lawyer in the first place.
Right.
He was like, no, we don't need a lawyer. I'll do this myself. It's just, And for him, in terms of that, I do believe that if he needed to come up with $5,000, he could, right?
Yeah. Ask his family or something.
Ask his family or something. Absolutely.
Right.
But it's not about the $5,000. No matter how much he says it's about the $5,000, it's about his stupid pride of being able to do this by himself and not needing help.
Yeah.
Right? I don't need help. You're going to tell me I need help? That means you're telling me I'm dumb. I'm not dumb.
Right.
I know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Right? And it's like, you lose the I know what I'm doing upper hand when you fuck it up the first time.
Oh my gosh. And especially as badly as it has.
Right.
But I would say what I appreciate about the second part of the blame game is that I thought it was really generous of Jasmine to kind of blame herself for this entire situation. She's like, I do. I blame myself. I should have never come here without my kids. I should have never put myself in this situation. It's like, okay, I don't think that's making her mother of the year, but at least acknowledging that, like, yeah, I've kind of been a shitty mom for not, like, considering my kids this entire time and leaving the country without them.
And leaving the country without them, sure. But it's like, but those are the things that I'm saying. I don't think she's wrong, but it is not inspiring confidence that you're going to be a good dad. That
you
do things wrong, you dig in your heels and you're like, no, we're going to do it my way. My way is the only way we'll do it. Like, that's, you're not, that that's not flexible enough for what a dad needs to be, man.
No.
Like, sometimes you got to just do, you got to take in your pride and do what needs to be done for the kids. And this is not showing that he's going to do that.
No, absolutely not. And, you know, I just don't think he's ready to be a dad in general, which is why it's so confusing to me out of the two of them, why he wants to have kids so freaking badly. Like, and I feel like this isn't just him. I think it's like just society, right? There's like this pressure for you to have kids. And some people just really aren't cut out for being parents because they just don't want to make those sacrifices. And I don't think there's anything wrong. I think there's something wrong in the person who is not willing to make those sacrifices and trudges forth with parenthood anyway.
Yes. I mean, that's what it is. I don't know if he's really actually internally, you know, discussed with himself or, you know, decided himself that he wants children because he loves children and he's generous and he wants to raise people. Or if it's just because my life is a failure if I don't have children. That's what everyone's told me.
Right.
Having children is part of being a successful life. And if I don't have children, I haven't had a successful life. And
it's I also think there is an element because I've been told this a couple times. I am childless and will always be childless. Like, well, who's going to take care of you when you're old? And I do think there's an element.
I'll pay somebody for that shit.
Right. Yeah, with all the money I save from not having a child and not having to pay some kid, you know, like into their adult life, I will use that money to pay someone to take care of me when I'm old. But I do think there is some element of that where people like use that as reasons why you should have kids. And
But I
you
feel
know,
like for Gino, that's like, hey, you have a wife that's like so much younger than you. Like,
right.
Obviously,
you don't
like,
have to worry about that.
You don't have to worry about because that it would be her, right? Like,
right.
Gino's what, 57?
Yeah.
Right? So
yeah.
The kid's not even going to be 30. The kid's not going to be like in a position where he's going to have a home with extra room to be able to take Gino in. Like, they're going to be in their 20s.
Well, his kid is going to move in with Gino, right? Or he's never going to leave. He's going to be old enough to be an adult, and then Gino needs help. So, yeah, one big happy family. All right, speaking of big, maybe families, not so happy, Ashley and Manuel. So, Ashley and Manuel, they're going to a motorcycle store. Manuel has had motorcycles in Ecuador, and he would like to have a motorcycle here so he can get around and meet up with his friends and, as he says, be free in the wind. Ashley tries to teach him to say motorcycle in English, and Manuel says that he's trying, but his English just isn't improving, and he thinks it's because he's trapped in the house. Ashley is using this motorcycle as a new tactic for getting Manuel to open up. She's hoping to show Manuel that she has his best interest at heart and that, you know, if she gives him these things, she's hoping that it will help him open up. They then get to the motorcycle store and try out some motorcycles as Manuel says he wants to be able to visit, I guess he has a large extended family in New York. The salesman shows him a few motorcycles that are capable of doing the trick for a quick trip throughout the state, and Manuel and Ashley try a few out. Manuel doesn't want Ashley to be on the back of the bike with him. Ashley is annoyed because she has gotten the impression that Manuel wants to leave on his motorcycle to visit his family, but not with her. Ashley feels like she's getting shut out of his family once again, and he asks if she wants to diaper him too. Ashley does not appreciate his attitude. Ashley takes Manuel then after to a witchy store, and the shopkeeper speaks Spanish. So Manuel asks, what are all of these things? And she basically says that most of the items there are for luck. Manuel says that he puts in effort to understand Ashley, but it's hard because the word witch elicits ugly and bad things. Ashley tells the shopkeeper that Manuel has some communication blockages, so she asks Manuel if he's open to a spiritual bath. He says he doesn't believe in any of that stuff because he's Catholic. Manuel says that Ashley can do what she wants, but he just doesn't want to be involved. Ashley claims that there have been hiccups in their K-1 visa, and the day after she did some rituals, it was magically, like witch magic, approved. So Manuel owes that to witchcraft. He thinks she wants to use witchcraft to make him learn English, which at this point I think he wouldn't really object to that. Manuel asks what a bath would include, and basically it's just dropping some stuff into a bath super easy. Ashley then tells him in English that the reason why they're there is because he keeps her from his family. Manuel says he just wants his space, and Ashley asks him to make her more comfortable then, and he agrees to introduce her, although he doesn't look too thrilled about it. He hopes by agreeing to it that it will get her to trust him, but he tells us that he's really worried about this meeting, that it'll be a disaster because he's afraid his family won't accept her. Later, we see Manuel at an English class at the public library. He's struggling and just really, they're really trolling him and highlighting his real struggles in this class. He doesn't understand the instructor. He thinks going to English class will make Ashley happy, which is the reason why he's going. And Manuel is feeling very lost and thinks the class needs to go a lot slower. Ashley is still feeling stressed about his family, so he also agrees to do the spiritual bath. He says he plays along with her nuttiness, even though he doesn't believe in any of it. They go outside, getting ready to do the bath, under a black walnut tree, which Ashley says has some significance. And there is a family of raccoons in this tree, making just like these horrific screeching sounds. Ashley plays it off like she called them to be there. Manuel jokes about turning blue because the water is so, so cold. So they're talking as Ashley is bathing him, and she tells him that she wants to be in his world more and asks what his family will think of her. He tells her that his family is Catholic, so telling them she's a witch will scare them. He tells her that they should probably not tell his family what she does for work and just tell them that she works at the gym. She doesn't want to lie about who she is, and now she's insulted that he wants her to lie about what she does. Okay, so what do you think about Manuel's request for asking her to lie about her, quote, profession to his family?
I feel like they need to work on finding some sort of middle ground where they're not like completely omitting something, you know, major part of what she does, but also find a way to describe it without using the word witch.
Yes, that is true. But okay, how many times have we seen this in couples where one person is really scared that their family is not going to accept their partner if they disclose whatever information, and then the partner insists, well, we should tell them the truth. That's who I am. And then the family rejects them, and then they're like shocked, like, why does the family accept me? It's like, your partner told you that their family was not going to like this piece of information. And I feel like that's what's happening here. Like, right. Manuel is just trying to protect her, and she's not getting it. Like, well, they should like me for who I am. They're not going to like you for who you are. He's trying to help that.
I was thinking the same thing. She just wants it. This is what's so frustrating about Ashley, is she's just like, but when I want something, everybody should want it. So if I want to be myself for this family, they should also want me to be exactly who I am and appreciate it. I want to be accepted, but I also don't want to change anything. And these things should both happen because I want them to.
Right.
Like, and it's like, well, that's not the way the world works, right?
Right.
And that falls into the thing we haven't found out about with her, like, debt and stuff, right? It's like, well, yeah, just because you wanted it to happen doesn't mean it gets to happen, right? And like, that's where it kind of comes from, because like, and I don't think he's really explained it enough to be like, there is no other word. We have to think of a different word, because if you come in there saying a witch, you might as well come in there being like, hi, I'm a demon. I'm sent from hell to like haunt everyone you have. Like, that's what you're doing. You're introducing yourself as what they think is something, as literally like coming up and be like, hi, I'm an evil person. Like, you should like me.
I wonder if there is like a Spanish word or like for psychic. Maybe that would seem less demon-like, even though it's kind of, I mean.
But I also feel like that's, well, I'm not going to do that because that's not exactly who I am. That's not how I contemplate myself. So I'm not going to tell anybody that I'm anything besides what I am, which is a witch, right? And it's like, well, you got to meet him somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. These two. I appreciate his effort for trying to learn English, but I feel like the public library is not working for him based on what we saw.
No, it needs to be like actual put together. You were here from the beginning English class, because I was very much like, well, and even that in the car, right? They're starting in weird places. Like, I actually don't hate where the library was. It was probably too advanced for him, but they were like ordering something at a restaurant.
Right. Say, which is fair. Like, you're going to have to do that often.
Chicken and rice. And he was like, rice, eat oil? And I was like, no, just chicken and rice.
And he just kept saying, oh, it's a boil.
Like, oh, he couldn't put them both together. It's like, oh,
right,
gosh.
Right.
Like, and it was, but hers was like, you know, he's like, oh, teach me some English. And she started with up and in. And I was like, I feel like those are the last words language learners get together. It's like prepositions, right? Those are like the weirdest, hardest things. And you're like, couldn't start with like our like bathroom or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, a little Duolingo at this point, right? Couldn't hurt.
I mean, it couldn't hurt. But I don't think he's wrong. He's never going to learn English sitting in that house, because if she tries to speak to him in English, she's going to go back to Spanish, which is like one of those things that I know in our district, they often literally want to get ESOL teachers that don't speak the main language that the kids speak. And it's like, no, I can't default to Spanish to you. I'm not going to talk to you in Spanish because I don't know Spanish, right? Because that's kind of the worst crutch that makes the language acquisition take a lot longer.
Yeah, definitely, for sure.
All right, so let's go on then to, let's go to Emily and Kobe. So Emily and Kobe and their family, they're in the traditional outfits we saw them buy last episode. And they're all back on the road. So Kobe says the family doesn't know about the outfits, but we move quickly past talking about the outfits, because first we get to see him driving around in the city in Cameroon, which is pretty crazy. We've seen it in a lot of other places. But it's one of those free-for-all, if there's space, take it, go, places, right? You know, and then they pass people, like there's four people on one motorcycle, and they're just like riding in the median, and they're yelling things through her dad David's open window. And that's when David points out that, you know what, I haven't seen another white person since I've gotten here. And they were like, well, yeah, that's, you know.
That's normal.
He's like, yeah, we don't see many white people. So they make it out of the city. And through the random militia roadblocks, he's just driving up and being like, oh, I hope we don't get stopped by the army here. They're like, what? So they get through. And then it's important that on the way to the family's village or where their house, that they don't, you know, run out of gas or anything on the way, because if they do and they have to get out of the car, they might get ambushed by thieves.
Oh, God. So
Kobe's starting to get a little worried about how much Emily's parents are freaking out about the roadblocks and the road, you know, roadmen or whatever blocking are going to rob them. And how that might, you know, being freaked out about a place might not sit well with his parents, who are very proud. So, again, he puts on the I'm pretty nervous act. So they get there in the dark, and everyone from the whole extended family is there to meet them and give welcoming hugs. So Kobe has 10 siblings, and he says it's been a while since they've all been together under her father's roof. So then there is some singing and some dancing, and they bring the parents inside. And Emily's parents are given a peace plant by Kobe's dad. And the happiness, his dad is like, I give you this in honor of my father. And it brings Kobe to tears. It brings Emily to tears. And we see Isidore, who is Kobe's dad, tell us in an interview how happy it is that Kobe found a wife and brought him two grandchildren. He also cracks jokes. I don't know how jokey they are, literally to the parents being like, I didn't think this guy was ever getting married. Like, man, I don't know how you did that. Yeah. That was wild. So anyway, then they go outside to eat. And while they're eating, Isidore says that they have arranged a traditional, they want to have a traditional wedding, Cameroonian wedding for the two of them, since everybody is here. And this is the time they can do it. So Emily and her family are confused, because how is that going to work? We're only here for a little while. And how long does that take to plan? And how much of the planning do we have to do? The next day, the family is debriefing about this and the previous night. So David and Lisa, who are Emily's parents, come in with some coffee, and they bring up the wedding thing like right away. Lisa is confused because they didn't know there was going to be a wedding. So Kobe says they're supposed to get married in the ancient ways to honor the ancestors. I mean, whatever he says, it makes sense. You're going to get married in traditional Cameroonian way because you're a Cameroonian. So Emily says this wedding is going to be the next ultimate test of whether the family is going to accept me, even though there is no indication at all that this family would never accept her. They like welcome her immediately.
Right.
So Kobe then walks them through the steps of a traditional wedding. That begins with, I think called it knock night, where it's like a whole thing where he's supposed to come over with his dad and request her hand. And then Emily's dad is supposed to request the bride price for this. And then they arrange it before the day of the wedding the next day. The parents aren't crazy about that. Dad cracks a few jokes about it. And Lisa's like, so I'm selling my daughter? I'm confused with material. So anyway, and then they make jokes about getting this goat that they've been committed, her family has been paid. How are we going to get it back to the U.S.? So they get to what's going to happen on the actual wedding day, and there should be about 100 people. So we're back to, I don't know how we're going to plan this wedding and prepare for it. So because I don't know anything. I don't know how to cook any of the food I'm supposed to cook. Well, I don't know what's going on. So this one got me. Did you believe that this wedding just got sprung upon them right now, and it wasn't like already in the plans before they came to Cameroon?
Yeah, I feel like it's gotta be, right? Because I know Emily's freaking out, like, what do I have to plan? It's like, you don't have to plan anything. I feel like the family has to plan, because, like, what are you gonna do? You don't know what the traditions are. So,
right, and it's not like the family is gonna expect you, you didn't know how to make the traditional Cameroonian dish? Oh, well, you're out of the family now.
So I feel like they're going to figure it out. Like, the family's going to figure it out for them. So I'm sure they've been thinking about it this whole time, whether or not they share that with production, different story, but
sure. Right.
Yeah. It's staged.
Right. Right. That's what I'm thinking. I want to see the traditional wedding. I actually, one of the better parts of the show is to see the various wedding traditions from all these different places. So I'm excited that they're doing it. They have something to do in Cameroon. I just don't believe any of them being like, this is going to be so stressful. And will they accept me? Like, this is the smoothest sailing couple we have on this season by far. It's not even.
Anything
going on.
Yeah, it was interesting. I was talking with someone about, you know, this whole episode, and they were saying how they appreciate that happily ever after, you really kind of see some of the couples like settle in and see who they really are as a couple. And she was specifically citing Kobe and Emily as, you know, she thought they were kind of a mess. And I was like, I didn't think they were much of a mess. Like, when it came to each other, at least, you know, when they were on the first time. Yeah. But she was like, they seem like such a like solid couple now, and they seem to really enjoy each other's company. I was like, I kind of thought that before. I thought Emily is kind of high maintenance and kind of a bit of a pain. And so I think we didn't really see Kobe as like enjoying himself as much, but he's a pretty chill guy. Like, I don't think he was like that upset. There wasn't any threat of them not being together or not getting married the first time around.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, there wasn't any, and I think they kind of played up the, Emily is bossy. Look at her telling him how to scoop up the poop. And it's like, but a little bit of that was like, he literally had never done it before. So,
let's be real here. She is bossy. Like, they're trying to even make it a thing this season, too. Like, American women, they just, like, tell you what to do all the time.
I think that's what production is trying to do, and I think she's savvy enough that she's not giving them much ammunition in terms of her being bossy, in terms of that being like, I'm sure they're going to be like, well, is he the man of the house? Do you obey what he says? Like, which is, that to me is the less interesting stuff that we have, is like the family asking if the African man is really in charge of the house like he's supposed to be. Like, I've used on that so many times. Like,
okay. Well, speaking man of the house, let's talk Sophie and Rob. Sophie's getting ready to go back to Rob's apartment, even though it's technically their apartment, but she hasn't been there in 2 months. She just doesn't want another argument like they had at the selfie museum the day before, but she also just doesn't want to be separated. She's unsure, so she's only bringing one bag for now. Rob notices immediately that Sophie has packed light, but he's happy that she's even there. He knows that they need to work on their communication, so he thinks that this is a great idea in helping with their communication. He points out the flowers he may or may not have illegally obtained, and then a letter, which is really a list of things he says will help them cohabitate. Sophie thought it might have been a love letter, but instead, Rob just gave her a list of chores that she needs to do every day. And also adds at the end of the list to leave the past in the past. Sophie is offended because she thinks leaving her makeup out is the lowest priority in trying to make their relation work right now. And she points out that she only left because of him. She didn't leave because she was being messy. Rob thinks that he is just trying to find ways so that way they could have less problems. And Sophie thinks that Rob is controlling, like when he counts how much toilet paper she uses, which, by the way, is one roll a day. And Rob thinks that that is excessive. Sophie points out that no one cares how much toilet paper she uses at K's. She then tells him that he shouts at her and that he has issues. She wants him to go to therapy. Rob says he will do whatever she wants to make her feel comfortable with him again. Sophie feels like she doesn't want to stay, and Rob can't believe that she's actually not going to stay there tonight. And he thinks it's sad that he has to beg his wife to stay. Sophie doesn't want to feel rushed and feels like this argument has kind of set them back, so she just wants to leave. She gives him a two-armed hug, which he points out, "Oh, you gave me a two-armed hug?" And she leaves. A couple days later, Rob picks a pink rose for Sophie. This one, I believe, he has legally obtained. He acknowledges that he's been lacking in the romance department, so he's hoping that he can woo her on his date, you know, by not giving her a list of chores. He apologizes to her about ruining the last time with his list. He tells her that he wants to read her a poem instead, and he does preface it by saying that he's not a poet, but it was actually a very sweet and hopeful poem. Sophie is a little skeptical that he wrote it himself, and she kind of teases him about it. She says that it's an amazing step. They go inside a bar to go learn how to two-step. Sophie didn't realize that people actually dress country. She just thought people wore that for Halloween. Sophie thinks that Rob is a really good dancer, which then I'm reminded of his weird-ass dance that he did for her when she first arrived in the U.S., which
Like, half-assed. Yeah. So everything he does is half-assed.
Yeah. But Sophie isn't much of a dancer, so she's feeling a bit goofy. Sophie is feeling a little stressed dancing, but it really does look like they're having a good time. Sophie hopes that if they keep the same energy that they have had there today, they will certainly have more good days than bad. In the middle of their dancing, Sophie tells Rob that her friend Callum is coming to visit from London. Sophie says that Callum travels a lot and that he was planning a trip to the US, so she just suggested that he stop by to visit. She hadn't brought it up before because they weren't living together, so it didn't really matter. Rob doesn't feel like he has much of a choice in the matter. Rob says that he's a nice guy and, you know, he'll meet him, and Sophie's like, "Yeah," but he agrees that he'll meet him and be nice. Rob does find it suspicious that Callum is flying pretty far to see Sophie. Rob wouldn't do that for any of his friends. He wants to know if the guy is attractive, and Sophie assures him that Rob is her type. And Rob says, unless this dude looks like Gollum, he's not going to be happy. All right, so what did you think of Rob's little list of chores?
So, by the list of chores, I feel like I wrote down that I thought his flowers, right?
Yes, his illegally obtained flowers.
His half-assed, I'm going the way here. I saw flowers. I'm like, oh, shit, I'm going to get flowers. So, the half-assedly obtained, you know, last-minute flowers that literally had thorns on them is a very, very apt metaphor for their entire relationship.
Right, sure.
I'm going to try like one thing at the end. It's going to suck and I'm going to suck about it, but it's like, you think it's pretty, right? Like, that's it. That's what we have for the attractiveness.
Oh my gosh.
I don't even know what he was thinking about.
Yeah.
Like, because he's just so, I don't get it. I think every time he comes over, just come over to talk one more time. Just go over this. I'm always like, the balls on this guy. Like, I would never have been think that would work, right? And then he does, and she comes over, and the first thing he does, like, oh, was that like a quarter of your stuff? Is like sarcastically make things at her. And then he left her. Why did he think a list of demands he had of her was going to incentivize her to move back in with him? It's like, she's like, you're the one who's in trouble here, you jackass. What are you doing?
Yeah. She's like, why do I need a list? I did not leave because I thought I was messy.
Right. It's like, I don't even understand why the list of demands was
existed.
It existed. It's like, you're trying to get her to forgive you, not the other way around.
Yeah. And then last demand, basically, like, forget everything I've done in the past and forgive and move forward. It's like,
that's always been his mantra. Everything I already did is done. So forget about it. Why are you still holding that over me? Bullshit. Like, he's always been like that. Right.
Yeah.
Which is why, but it's annoying to me that it works, right? Not that that necessarily works, but he kind of always gets what he wants because he can be, he was a complete shithead for 2 months and he spent one night agreeing to dance and be romantic. And it's like, oh, well, you know, I guess I have to move back. And like, what? Why?
She wants to forgive him. I mean, like, she's even said as much, like, if you just offered a genuine apology, but it's like, it's hard for Rob to even do that, which is why they're always a relationship in turmoil. But it's like, she doesn't require all that much of him, even when he does something wrong. You know, she just wants him to, like, kind of suck up his pride and be like, I messed up. I'm sorry. And she is fully willing.
But you messed up too. Right. Well, that's what about her. You messed up as well. Yeah.
And she's fully willing to, like, forgive him. But, you know, it shows two things. One, that he's an idiot because, you know, it doesn't take much. And then two, it doesn't take much to make her happy.
I don't think she'd be happy, though. I think she's like,
well, to get her to stay, at least.
To get her to stay, right? I think she's totally weirdly, like, stuck up his ass for some reason. It's like she just can't see what everybody else sees. And it literally takes literally the tiniest little whiff of, I can be like, and she says that, well, I think everybody else doesn't understand because, you know, they don't see this nice, flirty, fun, you know, Rob. And it's like, yeah, because he's not that 98% of the time. So he's not really that. Like, that's the exception to the rule. The rule is when everybody hates him.
Yeah.
Which is further emphasized by his stupid, because he looks like Gollum, I have a problem. That's the most insecure thing I've ever heard a man say. Like, why would you, if you thought you were attractive, you thought you were all that, why wouldn't you be like, well, I know he's not going to be as good looking as I am, so what does it matter? Like, no, but he's like, no, you can only be friends with ugly people or else I'll feel bad. Like, jackass. What a jackass.
Yeah. He's such a weird dude, too, just in general. Like, I feel like part of this is, I wonder a little bit if he thought, you know, I do like this girl. We're going to go on this show, and if things fall apart, like, no big deal. Like, you know, I'm going to get so many DMs, like, it's all good. And then realizing now he definitely got the villain edit. And so it's like realizing, like, oh, God, I got to cling to my one last hope because I ain't getting no DMs, at least not from anyone who legitimately wants to have a relationship as opposed to all those other, like,
just thirsty people. Yeah. Like,
right. Not even thirsty people.
Well, like, they're thirsty and they're clout chasing and thirsty. Well, right? That's what you're going to get.
Yeah. But I was thinking more so the bot ones that, like, wanted to pay bots. Money and stuff.
You got bots. You got people who are just, oh, he's hot, I'll do it. Like, okay, let's go. And you have the people who think they're going to be able to be on this next season with him if he breaks up with Sophie. Right.
Well, speaking of random thing, Colt's wife or whatever, they filed for divorce. So
haven't they been broken up and separated for a while, though?
I feel like they have. I don't know if they have been. I know things have been a challenge since Colt had that surgery. He had that injury on set for Last Resort. So, I mean, things are rocky then if they're going on Last Resort, but.
Right, for sure.
I mean, she tried to have the decency to stick with him through all his surgeries. And then I think shortly after his last surgery, she left.
Yeah.
I mean, I appreciate appreciate that. I mean, what an awkward position. You probably knew you didn't want to be with him before.
Right, and now you're like, well, now it was a medical thing. It looked like a jackass.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, if you're going on last resort, it's not like this was like, oh, I don't really want to take care of you now that you have medical issues. You know,
right.
It's like,
it was already
okay.
Rocky beforehand.
Right.
All right, so that leaves us to the last couple, right. And that is Nicole Mahmoud. So Nicole Mahmoud starts by she just brings out a giant plate of donuts for breakfast. It's like a dozen donuts for the two of them, because nothing says USA more like donuts. So Nicole tells us that he didn't end up wearing his PJs because, well, they didn't really wear anything in bed because they did other things, and it was a good night. So the donuts are, of course, as they are for everyone who's non-American, way too sweet. And he's used to a more savory breakfast, and then lists a bunch of Egyptian breakfast foods, and he's like, oh man, y'all are doing this to me. I need to get back. So anyway, the plan for the day is to go to Santa Monica Pier, which is an interesting choice for someone that we're kind of worried might think America is a hedonistic hellhole. But anyway.
It's true.
Anyway, they go to the souvenir shops, and he seems confused about how this works because she shows him all the outrageous things, the gaudy hats, the bikini t-shirts and stuff like that. And I think he was confused because he seemed to think she actually wanted him to buy that stuff. And it's like, no, that's not how this shopping works. You look at it and you laugh and you move on. So then they get to the actual pier and they talk about how hard it is to live in a different country, but she still seems pretty bummed that he's not as excited about it as she is. So then later on, they're walking to the pier, and he's a little freaked out by the seagulls and a lot homesick already. So she wants something to do to help him, but he's just like, I just need time. That's okay. Then they're walking down, and they walk past a woman in a purple dress and a hijab. And that's an important thing, right? Taking a picture or something, and then she just was like, oh, you like that? I know what I saw. And he's like, meaning that he was like checking her out or leering at her or something. And again, like probably the first Muslim person he's seen in the U.S. and he's like, oh, look, a Muslim.
Yeah.
Right. So she seemed to think he was all horned up for her, and it has triggered her insecurities.
Oh,
and when her insecurities get triggered, she turns into a monster bitch. So like they go over to the side, they're like the side. She's like, yeah, talking to him in like quiet tones. And she says, and I put quotes here. After that little incident, you can go back to Egypt for all I care if you want to be a womanizer. And then he's just like, yep, nope, I'm done. And then just walks off and leaves her there. So I guess I would start more at the beginning because I kind of thought some of this not where exactly where this was going from the beginning. But like if Mahmoud was coming, if you were in Nicole's shoes, where would you take him on his first day in the U.S.?
I don't know, because I think like I had mentioned last episode, like I feel like she's not necessarily trolling him, but she's really trying to like culture shock him, you know, in kind of a trolly way, you know, like, welcome to America. Here are all the extreme things that you have never encountered before and you would never like imagine seeing if you were back in Egypt. And it's like, I don't know, she's trying to shock him into like getting the program. Like, I don't really understand, but I feel like this is just part of the program, you know, like keep on shocking him.
Yeah, it's just wild to me because the whole thing is, you know, she has to know the situation. Right. At least as we understand it, like this guy did not want to move to America. He's doing it just for you. Right. And so I feel like, okay, I want to make him feel at home as possible. And I have a very simple question for where I would take him the first day. A mosque, like many mosques, all the mosques, which mosque seems best for you?
We
are definitely getting you to a mosque, and you're going to meet people from the Muslim community around here. And we're going to ease you into that transition. I'm not going to be like, oh, yeah, go to some place where they might be handing out flyers for strip clubs. Like, no, we're not doing that. Like, that seems crazy.
Yeah, I mean, maybe take in a little bit of nature, you know.
Yeah, like yeah, for sure.
Some of the natural wonders that maybe would be unique to LA. You know, I mean, I think if you're going to try transition him in a way where he is going to be responsive positively, like that's what you would do. It's
take him to Joshua Tree and be like, we also have a desert. Look, in our desert.
She has taken a page out of the Let's Make Him Hate America book. Yeah. And she is just like, you know, going through the highlights. And it's like, what are you doing?
Right. It just, I couldn't imagine. But then it turned so fast, like so fast. And it's like, I would never, because I feel like something similar has happened before. We've seen that jealousy before. And I can't remember exactly when, but that is just like, I looked at a woman and that's the womanizer. Like she called him a womanizer. Like it's not.
What? And it's like probably notable because you're just like, oh, someone like I can relate to. I wonder how many more of these people, you know, and I'm sure there's like thoughts that are separate from, wow, check out that really attractive person.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, there's like, lots of reasons you would get caught the stare at this person.
Yeah.
Besides like, oh yeah, that's what I want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, I don't know what she's trying to do to make him feel like he belongs, but this is not it.
None. There was no attempt to make him feel like he belongs here at all. It was as soon as you saw someone that made you feel like you might be able to fit in, it was, don't look at her. How dare you look at her? I'll send you back to Egypt. Oh my God.
Yeah. And I mean, okay, like, let's also, you know, kind of take note of her reaction. That was like a nasty reaction.
Very
like,
nasty.
I get, you know, like, oh, okay, you're feeling insecure. You thought he was checking someone out. But like, to go straight to what she did and said, I'm just like, okay, you are. It does make me wonder, is she trying to push him away? Because everything she has done so far this season, it's like, do you want to stay married? Do you want him to stay here? Because you haven't done a single thing to, other than maybe purchase his ticket to get him to want to stay.
Yeah, nothing. Since he's landed, it's been absolutely nothing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Couldn't even take down her big bush painting. Like, that's...
yeah. Oh, gosh, the big bush.
Yep.
All right. So, out of the group we have seen today, which is all of them that we've seen so far, yeah, we're only on episode two. Yeah, or three.
Episode three, right? And I'm starting to wonder if we're ever going to actually see Angela based on the possible legal trouble that they might be in.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
You know, I mean, maybe. They did it. They had that Jeffrey, we already knew some stuff about him, and they still showed him on the show. So
yeah.
Who knows?
Well, yeah, who knows? Okay. So out of the group that we saw today, who was your student of the week?
I mean, I feel like it's tough because we have, so far, we've seen, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 garbage couples and one good couple. But I went offside the good couple this time, and I went with Manuel for at least playing along with this bath and, you know, trying to go to an English class, I guess. So,
yes, I did, too. I went with Manuel, and it was the English class. It's like, he did it to make her happy. I think he's trying, although it's really hard to tell if he's really trying, because it's like, if this is you trying, like, you're so bad at this. I don't even understand how you could be this bad at it.
I mean, it very close to seemed like I've had students, and I've done this in the past too when I was younger, who get frustrated. And when they're frustrated, instead of working hard to try to be able to do it, they work really hard to prove to you that it's impossible to do.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
Like, Jesus, can't I even do this? And they're just like, I can't. Like, obviously, it's too hard to do. This is, you know, we can even do this. Like, I can't.
You know what it reminds me of? It's that episode of Friends where Joey's trying to learn French from Phoebe.
Uh-huh.
And she's like trying to spell everything out, like, je m'appelle Claude. And it's like putting a blah, 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 blah. And it's like, that's not what you can say all the pieces. Now just put them all together.
Right, yes. Yeah.
So, yeah, it was not good. What about your duns?
I went Rob. Like the bad flowers, the to-do list, and then to cap it off with the, your friend better be ugly, is all just like, just awful behavior.
Yeah, I went with Nicole, just her reaction at the very end. It's like, Oh my gosh, that was so unwarranted.
Yeah. I mean, and that's such a low, low thing. Like, I feel like, yeah, you're going to check people out. Like, and guys are much more clumsy about it than girls are. Like, I know girls check people out too, but they're way more subtle about it. Guys are like, we're dumb. Right. And so sometimes you get caught checking somebody out, and the response should be like, what are you checking her out for? Like, oh, sorry.
Right,
like that,
right.
And that's fine. Like, that's it, right?
Seek to understand.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, that's a baby lesson there. That's not my life lesson, but.
Yeah.
All right. What about your life lesson?
So my life lesson was going towards Gino is like, you don't get credit for hard work that fails. Like,
sure.
Like, if you, you know, did mechanical work on a car and somebody drove it and the wheels popped off and they crashed and they're like, God damn it, Gino, I crashed my car and the wheels popped off. You're like, I feel like you're not respecting how hard I worked on that. It's like, it doesn't matter how hard you worked on it, the wheels popped off the car. Like,
oh,
you didn't talk about how you busted your ass, but you busted your ass and fucked up. Like, so you don't get credit for the fuck up.
Yeah. My life lesson is towards Liz's family. Her mom and her grandma both said that, you know, they will support this relationship as long as Liz is happy. Newsflash. Someone can be happy in a toxic, terrible relationship.
Yes.
It just, you know, you should want more for that person other than just they're happy.
Right.
You
should want them to
be in a healthy relationship where their other person treats them well. Yes.
Well, he keeps her in a cage in the basement, but she's happy in the cage. So I guess we'll have to support this relationship. Like, no.
Yeah.
She doesn't want to be happy in the cage. Stop that.
Right. Okay. So we're just getting started with this season. So we will be back again this time next week.
Yep. We'll see everybody then.
Okay. Until then.
All right.
Bye. Okay, bye.